This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. Well, we look forward to this. Always fun to talk to this guy joining us now for some fresh perspective on what the Seahawks team did last night and what they've got in front of them. Our buddy Jake Heaps is here. What's going on, man?
Hey, you guys let me come on for the hour? I'm pumped.
Heck yeah.
Let's do this.
Heck yeah.
Whoa, wait. What? An hour? Yeah. No, hold on. I don't think that was the agreement.
Oh, we didn't get Dave's people involved in time.
Oh, man. Yeah, apparently my people didn't talk to your people, but they told me an hour. So I canceled out my schedule. You know, the my wife's got the kids for an hour. So
nice.
I'm okay. Here whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Well, I just am glad that you're able to join us because I know you're a big shot TV guy. I saw you last night on TV.
Give me a break. From the guy who is, you know, the analyst, the play-by-play man for the Seahawks. I don't want to hear
it. I wasn't on TV last night. I saw you.
I missed it, Jay. You got to let people know this is happening. I didn't even know you were going to be doing this.
I apologize. Next time I'll make a bigger announcement. It was on the pre-post game show with Cairo and Bob. I will make sure I personally text you.
Yeah, I would appreciate that, man. I want to be able to, you know,
critique your performance. Jake knows how to tie a tie, by the way.
Does he? He's got to step up on me then.
That's right.
Well, let's talk about this team and let's start with, you know, we handed out roses and thorns earlier, Jake, and Dave and I both give a rose to DK Metcalf. I mean, he was spectacular. Outside of the drop in the end zone, that's one you're going, man, you got to make that catch. But, I mean, the one-handed catch up against the sideline, and you know, he's got Slay all over him. I mean, he just abused him all night, 10 catches, 13 targets. And then he said this after the game.
You know, I still got work to do. One of the defensive coaches came up to me, and it kind of made me mad that he was like, I was in Detroit with Megatron, but you're not there yet. You know, in my mind, I'm not trying to be Megatron. I'm trying to be me. So, had a little chip on my shoulder the whole game.
Was that Jim Schwartz?
Yes, sir.
So, and Schwartz, for his part, was saying, hey, you may not be Calvin yet, but you're on your way, is what he was trying to say.
Right.
Saying both times he was trying to compliment him. And Jake, you know DK. You've worked with him in the offseason, you and Russ. And so you have a sense of his personality. Is he a guy like, we always talk about Michael Jordan, creating something out of nothing, finding a slight anywhere, whether it's there or not. He would manufacture it. He's just somebody who needed it, and obviously it worked for him. Is DK similar to that?
Yes, but also there's a difference between guys who are just thankful that they're in the league and are going to take any attention that comes their way versus guys that are never satisfied. Guys who believe that they belong and believe that they have the ability to be the best. And when you do the comparables in terms of the numbers, I'm not saying DK Metcalf is better than Calvin Johnson at this point in his career, but the numbers say he is.
Yeah.
And when you have a elite alpha competitor like DK Metcalf, he's going to take that personally. Maybe you didn't mean it to be personal. We all have those jokes that, you know, we think is going to hit and it doesn't, or someone gets offended by the joke and it wasn't meant for that whatsoever. And I think that's what happened with Jim Schwartz here. He's coming over the sideline or coming over to DK trying to give him a compliment, and DK takes it as a slight. And if you're an elite competitor, you do take that as a slight because, as DK mentioned, you know, he doesn't want to be Megatron. He wants to be his own person, and he wants to make his own name in this league. And when you say that you're not this person yet, that means that you're not, you think somebody else is better. And DK has the type of personality where he is going to, you know, use that as motivation every single time.
And Dave, you sent out the stats just comparing just Megatron and Metcalf through their first 27 NFL games. I mean, it's DK, Jake is right, and Dave, you had the numbers. DK Metcalf through his first 27 games, 116 receptions. Calvin Johnson had 95. 1,939 yards. Calvin Johnson, 1,662 yards. 16 touchdowns for Metcalf, 11 touchdowns for Calvin Johnson.
Well, and wasn't Jim Schwartz just saying he's not there yet, but you're on your way? You know,
correct.
It's funny, Bob, you brought up Michael Jordan because wasn't Remember the part where I think it was George Carl didn't say hi to him at the restaurant or something?
Yeah.
And he was thinking, well, I didn't want to say anything to him because I don't want to, you know, say something wrong. And then he turns it into the fact that he snubbed him.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, and I guess I don't see DK, you know, that way. But, Jake, you know him. Here's what I want to ask you, man. I don't know why this strikes me as so, I don't know, interesting. But I've never seen, not in a long time, have I seen three players as angry as Darius Slay, Stephon Gilmore, and Dre Kirkpatrick. So, I mean, and DK is just such a nice guy and everything, but what is he saying to those guys, or what is he doing, or is he just getting them so frustrated? It's remarkable to me that he has been able, and that's all been in the span of, well, I guess, you know, the Gilmore one was pretty early on, but last week against Arizona, the same thing, man.
He's the new Breno Giacomini.
He is, but he's not a dirty player.
Right.
Have you guys ever, you know, played pickup basketball or any sport a board game or something where you've got somebody who takes it way too seriously?
Oh, yeah.
On the other side, that they are just going all out. And you're like, dude, chill out. Like, come on, man. Like, we're just trying to have a good time, right? That's how these NFL prima donna DBs are, Dave and Bob. They don't want a receiver to be at their neck all game long. They don't want somebody like DK Metcalf, 6'4", 230 pounds, trying to punish them the entire game. And that's what DK does. He is that annoying, scrappy pickup basketball player that is taking it way too seriously. And guess what? The guys on the other side of the ball, and Dave, you know this. I mean, you played that position and had that mentality. You don't want any offensive player to punk you, especially not some receiver and not some 22-year-old receiver who is on his way to be a superstar. Am I right?
Is he only 22?
He's only 22 years old.
Oh my
gosh. That's insane.
Yeah,
he is.
I mean, that guy's he's still young. You think of him still as kind of a rookie, really. So, yeah, I mean, he's just got everything going for him right now. The thing I love, though, Jake, is that, like, the drop, I mean, we're seeing a fair amount of those. You know, I guess I look at it like a good thing. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, he still has some area of improvement. He can still get better. And like,
no question.
Bob just, you know, read the numbers. I mean, it's already pretty darn good from a team that I know they're throwing a lot this year, but
He's already over 1,000 yards, by the way, with five games.
When I heard that last night, I was like, no way. If you would have asked me, I just hadn't paid attention, I guess. I would have said, where's DK? 750 maybe. I can't believe that he's already over 1,000.
Yeah, he's amazing.
It's incredible.
And by the way, here's Pete Carroll referencing the Schwartz comment, and here's what Pete Carroll had to say about it with Danny and Gallant.
Coach Schwartz can say whatever he wants. That was kind of unusual that he would bring something like that up. You know, Megatron's kind of a thing of the past. You know, not many people know about that. I mean, if he'd have said something and referred to him like the Mandalorian, you know, I think it would be a little more appropriate. I wouldn't mind calling DK the Mandalorian anytime he wants. But I don't know. You know, the coaches get to say whatever they want. I thought that was kind of surprising. But I like the way DK handled it.
Yeah, by going 10 catches, 177 yards, and forcing the opposition into some heated penalties. I like that way, too.
So he did it before the game?
He did it before and then clarified after. Like, hey,
both
times I was trying to compliment him, is what Jim Schwartz was saying. He's like, so he clarified after the game. And then just one more, talking about DK getting under the skin of the opponents out there.
They're trying to stand up to him. He's got a real factor about him. You know, he's so physical, and he knows it, and he gets after him, and he's unusual in that regard, and the guys don't like it. So it's kind of fun. The good part about it is DK knows what's going on, and he's really poised, and he's not getting himself in any trouble at all. He's just kind of he's stirring it up a bit.
And he feels like, to me, Jake, that he's getting a real clear sense of his advantage physically. Right. When we're talking about his size and his speed, seems like he's, you know, it's leading to more confidence. Obviously, the success he's had is leading to confidence. But I think it just feels like he's using it more, that he trusts his size more and he trusts his speed more. And he's just I mean, it's just maturity. It's just a guy in his second year. He's not a rookie anymore. He's had a ton of success already, but he's got such a massive advantage. Not only is he huge, but he's incredibly fast. He runs great routes. That was the knock on him coming out of college, and so far he's been extremely durable.
He has, Bob, and his work ethic is second to none. I mean, when I saw him at rookie minicamp for the first time, I texted Russell Wilson on the Hill and just said, "You're going to have a lot of fun with this guy. This guy's the real deal." And from rookie minicamp to his rookie season to now, he has made steady improvement. And you have to really give credit to his parents and his dad, Terrence, who played in the league and knows what this game is all about, and the preparation and the separation between the great players, the elite players, and the average players in this league. And the moment that DK stepped foot in the VMAC, he was not a rookie. He was a pro. And he handled himself like a pro. And that's where you see these steady improvements, guys, with DK. And you see, Bob, as you pointed out, this confidence because he's worked at it. And he believes in himself. And he knows the physical tools that he has are difficult for anybody to handle out there on the edge. And, you know, one of the things that Pete said in one of those cuts there is that DK stirs it up. He talks trash. But he is very much in control. There are plenty of guys in this league who like to talk trash or think they like to talk trash, and they emotionally get outside of themselves. DK knows exactly who he is. He's comfortable in his own skin, and I think that that's something that has really stood out to me, is that a lot of these scraps could go the wrong way, and DK could have made some really bad decisions out there, and he's kept his cool relative to not drawing any personal flags out there while everybody else's blood is boiling.
By the way, I think the 177 yards was a franchise Monday Night Football record.
Yeah,
for the Seahawks. And somebody texted in that he beat Jerry Rice. What, Jerry Rice had a really good Monday Night game?
I don't remember him having a good game for the Seahawks. That's funny.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's what'd you think about... Do you think DK... Now, you remember the fourth down play, Jake, where they down on the goal line... where they went for it on the first drive. And
yes.
DK was supposed to, crack down on that defensive. Are they asking too much of him there? Or do you think that he's sitting there going, I can block that guy? Because I think it was Barnett.
Yeah, he's sitting there thinking he could block that guy. But, Dave, we need to ask you this. Most times when a tackle or a guard pulls, right, they pull, what is the normal reaction for a defensive lineman? What are they taught to do? Are they taught to look inside, look for that next guy, or are they taught to shoot the gap and go straight upfield?
Yeah, well, I don't think I don't think he was reading anything. The way he shot upfield, I mean, typically, yeah, you see a guard pull to your outside, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to get cracked here. Or, there's going to be somebody outside that, and the really good ones will almost turn and look directly at the guy and then try to get right down the line. But he was just so fired up to get downhill. He got off, on the snap, great. And I just didn't think there was much of a chance for DK there, because he's done that before. Yeah. Picture this.
Correct.
When he ran down the Buda Baker, and on that play, down in Arizona, they get a goal line stand, then the offense comes back. And remember the 30-some yard touchdown they scored was Dwayne Brown pulling around the outside, leading Carlos Hyde off of a crack block, crackback block, really good one by DK. In that game. So he can make those blocks, and I'm just curious, that's part of his game. I'll bet you that he kind of gets a little chip on his shoulder about too.
He does, but that play in particular, guys, I'm just going to be honest, I hated the play call. I hated that in that moment. I hated why did I hate it? Because there's just too much going on. When you have, pulling tackles, pulling guards, in theory, it's a nice play, but as you know, Dave, it is mayhem, and a lot can go wrong down there when you have all those moving parts. Yeah. It's better to get downhill, hat for a hat, or put the ball in Russell Wilson's hands. And
I thought they got too cute on that.
Yeah. I think they got too cute on that one. And quite honestly, DK had zero shot to block that guy because he didn't. didn't do anything what was, you know, coaches, you draw it up on a board and you say, okay, these guys are supposed to do this. That defensive end did not react the way that they were hoping, and he shot straight up field and blew up the entire play. DK had no shot.
Let me ask you about the one play, and again, we're nitpicking a guy who had 10 catches on 13 targets. So, understanding he had a brilliant night. There was the drop in the end zone. Okay, that happened. There was that deep ball that Russell threw where it looked like DK pulled up for just a quick second and then realized, oh, I got to turn the Jets on again. Or there was just that weird hitch there for a moment. What do you think was going on there? Because it looked like a good ball. It looked like if he kept his stride, Russell threw the ball on the money.
Yes, he did. And that's the crazy part about this, guys, is we're talking about this amazing night that DK had. He could have probably had easily with that catch on that deep goal ball. He probably scores it. He probably could have had three touchdowns and around 250 yards receiving. I mean, he was that close to having that kind of night. And on that goal ball, it's really a technique that him and Tyler have developed and kind of perfected. They shield off the receiver. They don't just work to stack them and get in front of them, but if it's a close ball, they think it's going to be close, they will actually slow down their DB and shield them off with their back so that they can, you know, lunge forward and make the catch at the end. Well, Russ threw that right on the money. He didn't slow down DK at all. And DK just misgauged that particular play. If he just runs straight through it, he catches it easy on the run. And so that was one of those where he misjudged the ball. And that was unfortunate because that would have been a huge play. And then obviously the drop in the end zone, that would have been a capstone on the entire night. The game itself, the DK's performance, I mean, it would have been an awesome moment. And those are things that are going to continue to fuel him, no doubt.
While we're talking about DK, I want to play Darius Slay, who was his victim last night. He was on him, and man, he just had a rough go of it. Apparently a little offended by reporters who were asking whether the Eagles should have given him help with DK or not.
Hey, Slay, was there any discussions on the sideline by you or anybody that you know of to possibly get you some more help as Metcalf kept having that big game?
Hell no, I don't need no help. What kind of question is that? Next one.
I like the confidence, but it looked like you kind of needed some help, man.
That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
What kind of question is that? Next one.
Could you imagine in that moment, you're regarded as one of the best corners in the league, right? And you just had someone who physically was better than you that particular day, right? There's nothing that Darius Slay could have done. I mean, look at the one-handed catch that DK had. Slay was in perfect position, and DK still comes down with it. I mean, it's one of those things that in that moment, that hurts your pride big time. I mean, I was making the comparison on Jake and Stacy earlier today that it's like me when I try, you know, we come back, my wife and I, we come back from a grocery run, and it is a personal challenge for me to bring in all the groceries into the house. Like, I take it as
one
a personal
trip, right?
Event. Exactly. One trip. I'm not going to, and if anybody suggests otherwise, like, that's a personal offense to me. I feel like that's how Darius Slay was in that moment.
Only Jake could compare bringing in the groceries to a competitive moment in the NFL.
I've got that same affliction, though, right, trying to bring in everything at once. It's all going in at once.
That kill you, right?
It's no multiple trips. That's it.
That's right. The circulation could be cut off in my fingers, and I'm bringing it in. No questions.
My dad used to call that a lazy man's load.
Where you're just trying to get it all at once?
Yeah, you're going to break something. Just make another trip. Don't be lazy. I'm with you guys on that.
Problem is, I go to Costco every week, Dave, so everything's in bulk. It's a lot harder to carry.
That is very difficult.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Slay was, look, he's all pro in 2017 and then a three-time Pro Bowler the last 3 years. So, yeah, it was really interesting. I can't wait to see what's going to happen. I know we're talking a lot about DK right now, but I can't wait to see the matchup against the Rams, you know, down the road. But in the meantime, Jake, how do you look at these games? I guess everybody, and this was kind of what I was afraid of, is that, you know, I asked the question last week, like, well, what if they beat the Jets 21-20? I mean, are we going to – is that a loss for the Seahawks? Mm-hmm. I mean, how are we going to look at over these next few weeks? And I just think we're going to find out that these teams aren't necessarily that bad. Like that front seven, those linebackers, Alex Singleton, Duke Riley. I mean, those guys, Edwards, T.J. Edwards, those guys were good. I mean, they played really well. And this is a pretty good offense, right? So I think we're gonna come up against that. But how do you view, you know, wins against teams when you know that they probably should beat them?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's a difficult way to evaluate because every win in the NFL matters. And to me, my overall feeling when I woke up this morning was all the complaints that you could have. Look. We can poke holes at a lot of things, and I think there's some valid conversation to be had. But overall, they accomplished the mission. They were never behind. They were in full control the whole way. They dominated the game. I mean, guys, we're talking about the Seattle Seahawks defense in 2020, and they held, I don't care how bad of an offense the Eagles had, five straight three and outs. That's a tremendous performance. And if it isn't for one of the referees being temporarily blinded, I'm not sure what blinded him, but he didn't see it. That horrific non-call on that intentional grounding that Wentz had, they shut out the Eagles in the first half of the game. I mean, they had a very solid performance. And those are the things that you look at. I felt like they were building. And they treated the Eagles' offense as they should have. They treated them as a bad offense, and they were able to take advantage of an inferior offensive line. They were able to take advantage of an inferior passing attack. If Carson Wentz had thrown for over 350 yards, like they have done to inferior quarterbacks this season, guys, that's something to be concerned about, especially at this point of the year. But that didn't happen. They're continuing to get better. They're continuing to grow. They're continuing to gain confidence in one another. And I think that is a very valid reason to be excited or to be happy with the win that they had. And they didn't let this opportunity slip in terms of them being 8-3 now. They're atop of the NFC West division. There's a lot to be excited about, and as they're moving forward, I think that you have to look at it one week at a time in terms of the check marks. Are they continuing to make the right steps in the right direction to build themselves into a championship-caliber team?
Again, Jake will be with us for the entire 3 o'clock hour, so make sure you stay tuned. Coming up, he tweeted out something last night, a little frustration with what he called the lack of killer instinct. We'll get into details as to what got Jake so fired up. That's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. Our buddy Jake Heaps sitting in with us for an hour, the entire hour. Love that. Jake, you are on Twitter. We're on it throughout the game, commenting on different aspects, different plays, what's going on there. But at one point, you tweeted something about being frustrated with the team's lack of killer instinct. What was it you were referring to?
Well, I was referring to the end of the game, to be honest with you. Especially at the 6-minute mark of the game, you have Pete Carroll, Brian Schottenheimer elected to run the ball three straight times. And they were already trying to run out the clock. And at that point, they had deemed that the game was over. I understand that the way that the Eagles offense was performing, look, you're able to do this, kill some clock, get out of there with a win. I fully understand that. But to me, those are the types of moments that, you know, with this offense, you have that you have to have a killer instinct, and you have to have the trust in your quarterback to be able to get things done. And with Russell Wilson, I want to remind people that, you know, for the first half of the season, I know that there was a 3-game stretch there where he, you know, turned the ball over at a high rate, but for the majority of the season this year, Russell Wilson has played at an extremely high level. And what I guess was concerned with as I was watching the game and watching the end of that game in particular, guys, is more of a bigger issue than that particular instance potentially of because the defense gets better and plays better, that you start to play more conservatively on offense, that you get back to more trying to run the ball, trying to establish the run, and play that style of offense rather than merging the success of, you know, everybody calls it letting Russ cook, whatever. The way that they played it in the first half of the season, for the most part, and merging the way that that defense is playing now, that's what I think is going to be the key for this team to truly become a Super Bowl team. It's not about, you know, this run game and getting this run game going on first and second down. To me, the reason why the Arizona Cardinals game, guys, to me was so fun to watch and was so successful was because it didn't feel like the run game was forced. It felt like they capitalized on opportunities and moments. And that's where, you know, Carlos Hyde was so effective and, you know, Bo Scarborough was so effective. So you had that element of your game in there, and it was married really nice with, you know, an aggressive attack. Whereas I felt like against Philly, they were more of the approach that they wanted to play conservatively, and they wanted to really force the issue in terms of running the ball.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I always look at it like, you know, if it looks forced because they don't work. You know, I mean, things break down, and
yeah,
you know, yeah, you're forcing it in here, and it's not working. That was a really good front seven, I'll say that. And
they
really
are very good. Yes.
I mean, and you look at Arizona and what they do up front, you know, I mean, it's confusing when it comes to the pass and who you're supposed to block, but, you know, they've got a bunch of linebackers and DBs up on the line that offensive linemen can just feast on. So I felt like that had part to do with it. But, yeah, I see your point, though. I just – it's got to be tough to be a defensive coordinator, though. And, you know, I'm sorry, offensive coordinator, and, you know, try to put, you know, the run in. How much do you think Jake was – I thought maybe Chris Carson, I don't know that he's one of those guys that can come back and just hit the ground running right away. He just couldn't get to that. I think he had the longest run in the game, but he had a 16-yarder. But still, it was like he got to like that second level and just couldn't get past it. So it was like, you know, he'd make a cut, and typically he'll get through. And, you know, he had the long touchdown, pretty long touchdown run. But I wonder if maybe, you know, all that time off for him, because it was the Arizona game the first time, I think, when he hurt his foot. And, you know, it's been quite a spell. And, you know, maybe he just wasn't quite in rhythm yet. How did he look to you?
Well, I think he was obviously on a pitch count last night, and I think that's for good reason. And Chris Carson made no bones about it in terms of the way that he approached the last couple weeks, that he did not want to come back before he was ready. That, you know, he probably could have came back a week earlier, but he wasn't fully confident. He wanted to make sure that he was fully ready to go. Obviously, he's preparing to try and negotiate for a contract down the road, and the Seahawks also want him around for this final stretch and through the playoffs. So it's a mutual agreement, but the first time I'd seen Chris Carson make some business decisions out there, and that doesn't mean he didn't run hard. For example, his first catch that he had, not the first one that ended up getting called back, but the first catch that he still had room to cut back in and try and run somebody over and get some extra yards. And you see him typically make that decision, but he went out of bounds. And I don't mind it. I have zero issues with it. We watched for years with Sean Alexander tripping himself in the middle of runs so he was avoiding hits, right?
Let's not compare him to that. Let's please don't compare Chris Carson.
No, we're not comparing that. That's what I'm saying. It's not to that degree whatsoever. But I think that there was an extra concerted effort by him and the coaching staff to make sure that he gets through game one healthy, confident, strong, and you're going to see Chris Carson look more and more like himself, even though he had a pretty nice night last night, guys, over 5 yards per carry.
You know, that's something that we talked to him about a couple of years ago, and he actually talked about it like he was almost kind of he was having this stream of consciousness where he's like, yeah, I think I do probably need to at some point stop trying to run people over. And, you know, you kind of had that conversation. It was back, you know, I think it was with Danny and Jim. And, you know, because he loves that part of it, I think. So, yeah, when you saw him do that, I was like, I was happy. Like, he's the first running back ever that I've been happy to see turn down a hit because, you know, he only has, you know, like you said, the pitch count, but also, you know, you only got so much wear and tear that you can have on your body. And, you know, he's a guy that's going to take a lot of that. And so, yeah, I'm all for him. And I'm sure the coaches, too, are saying, hey, you gotta just, you know, step out of bounds.
Hey, Jake, quickly, you know, that was with us. That was last year, Dave. When we talked to Chris Carson, he said that.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Morris got the cut right here, just for a little flashback.
Preserve yourself. And then Tyler Lockett always tells me, like, you're starting to learn. Like, you're starting to, you know what I mean, to go out of bounds. You don't have to take every hit that you know what I mean, that you see. So I was kind of surprised myself when I went out of bounds on that sweep, but I felt good because I didn't have to worry about no hits on that.
Sounds like Jim. He was surprised by him doing something.
By the way,
Jim,
he thought.
Jim would always say that he was surprised that he thinks this. But, yeah, that was I mean, in that situation, it's just like an instinct. It's like you're out on the field.
Yeah.
Things happen so fast, and you just all of a sudden follow a certain instinct. And
what? That's right. And that's what you love about him, right? That's what you love about what he brings. That's certainly what Pete Carroll loves about him. Did you guys see Pete Carroll more fired up than Chris Carson's touchdown last night? I mean, he was losing his mind. He loves
was fired up through
32.
The whole game, whether it was joy or anger. He's screaming at the officials. And
you know what, though? I almost gave Pete a thorn for this because he didn't get nearly upset enough about the grounding call on Wentz that wasn't. The guy caught the ball on the sidelines like 3 yards in front of the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Pete was going to lose his mind because when he gets fired up, he gets angry. I was like, oh, man, I can't wait for this. And we didn't see anything.
Yeah, I think seeing him with a mask on mutes some of it. You don't really see it's not as animated. You don't see the mouth moving or the chewing of the gum or it's, you know, so it's hard to tell just how exasperated he may be in that moment. But, man, he's trolling that sideline. He's pacing up and down and.
I love
69
it.
Years old. Unbelievable. All right,
I
coming
love
up.
When he gets fired up, man.
Well, if there was ever a reminder to be thankful for Russell Wilson, seeing the Eagles situation with Carson Wentz makes you really thankful. We'll get deeper into that. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, Jake Heap's in with us for the hour on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We've got the professor, John Clayton, joining us at the top of the hour here with Wyman and Bob. But for the time being, our buddy Jake Heaps spending the 3 o'clock hour with us talking Seahawks football. And we talked about it before the break or heading into the break, how thankful we are for a player like Russell Wilson. A franchise quarterback who you have no doubts about. Doesn't mean he makes every play or there aren't complaints or he makes mistakes, but we're watching a guy who was an MVP candidate at one point, a guy who was given money to be the future of a franchise, and Carson Wentz look like an absolute shell of his former self. Now, I'm not sure how much of that you could chalk up to his O-line just being riddled with injuries and his lack of targets, weapons out there, but, man, Jake, can you explain the connection to Diggs? I heard you and Curtis and Stacy joking about what, you know, they've got the chemistry, so it really worked out well. But in all honesty, as a quarterback, and you're watching that, what is he seeing? There was nobody within, 7-8 yards that was wearing an Eagles uniform?
Yeah, it was weird. And you really look at Carson Wentz in this performance, and you get to see him up close and you get to watch film as you're prepping for the Eagles and all that. And I feel bad for him, guys. I think this is still a really talented quarterback, but this is the byproduct of a couple of seasons now where I'm not really worried about his injuries. I don't think his injuries are playing in the back of his mind as he's playing the game, but it's certainly the 46 sacks now that he has had over this season, 2 years in a row where his offensive line has been riddled with injuries. The receiving core has been riddled with injuries, and he's been asked to go out there and continue to make good decisions, step in the pocket, and play at a high level. And that's just a really, really difficult thing to do for any quarterback. And now you see Carson Wentz, who is just playing shell-shocked, and he is missing throws that I believe he would normally make. And so I think it's all a byproduct. And now Carson Wentz, you're looking at him now, and you're wondering – is this the end? Is this the end of Carson Wentz's career? I would love to see what he looked like in a new situation after the season, but it's crazy. As you mentioned, the Eagles have invested serious capital in Carson Wentz over the offseason, and they're pretty much stuck with him. And what are you going to have, a backup quarterback with, you know, that you're paying that kind of money to? I just have a hard time seeing it, guys.
Well, fourth most guaranteed money in the NFL, $109 million. I was just looking at the graphic last night. If he's not on the roster next year, it costs the Eagles $59 million in salary cap. $59. And then in 2022, it's $24 million on the cap. I mean, it's – I'll tell you, and I don't know if he did this as much before. I guess I hadn't paid attention, but, man, he stares down his receivers. I mean, he's looking where he's going, and there's not much of, you know, what you see from Russ checking, you know, left, right, you know, third progression, whatever. You just see him, and I guess he thought Goddard was going to turn out. So on that pass that went right to Diggs,
had to have right. If not, it seemed like it was a perfectly executed throw that him and, you know, Quandre Diggs must have been working together pregame, and, you know, they really got their chemistry down, because that was a beautiful pitch and catch, but it was just to the wrong guy. It was bizarre.
But he was so wide open that he had to hit him. I mean, just, he hadn't seen anybody that open all night. So,
well, if he was that bad, he would have overthrown him, Bob, right?
Yeah, you're right. He hit him right between the numbers. Yeah, it's one of his best passes of the night. The other thing that was head-scratching was what Doug Peterson did when they bring in Jalen Hurts. He throws one pass, completes it 6 yards, and then he's out. I'm going, what? Yeah. What? And that wasn't even, you know, a trick play where they often will have him come in, but Carson Wentz will still be on the field. He was off the field. You're thinking, oh, boy, okay, he's seen enough. He's going to see what the young guy has. And he throws one ball. That made no sense to me at all.
No, it didn't. It was bizarre. And quite honestly, guys, what I thought that was a pre-planned deal. I thought that, because if you remember, Carson was in during that he was in on the huddle on the field, and then it went to the second quarter, and Jalen Hurts is you know, out there when the second quarter starts. So I thought maybe they were trading off quarters, that maybe Doug Peterson was going to give Carson Wentz a quarter, then Jalen Hurts a quarter, and see who kind of had the hot hand or who was moving the team best, and make his decision in the second half. But he only put him in for one play. And you could see Jalen Hurts, they kept panning to him. And I think that he was confused out there as well. But as we had mentioned before, as much as we would like to say that it's always the best player that plays, and typically it is in the NFL, there are also decisions that are made because of the financial investments that are made into players. And with Carson Wentz, it's a perfect example, because what are you going to do? You really going to bench Carson Wentz after you invested all this money? I just don't see that happening. And quite honestly, guys, I think that there are bigger issues with that franchise and that team than Carson Wentz in the long-term future.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, here's – Danny used to say this all the time, that it – you know, the worst thing is having the wrong franchise quarterback. It's not having a franchise quarterback, you know, a bad one or anything, but when you have invested in a guy and then you're in it for the long haul, I don't think he can all of a sudden be that bad. And you couldn't have a better coach. I mean, he's a quarterback-friendly coach, obviously, a backup quarterback himself. So, but, boy, it kind of also brings to mind how blessed we are. Another graphic I saw last night, and this is something that I've been on in, you know, our notes, and Rabel and I, before the games, will do the Russell stat of the week. And one of them was a comparison to Peyton Manning. It was something about, you know, throwing this many yards and so many touchdowns. But the thing that I went and kind of dug into the numbers are, in this one, the graphic they had last night was Peyton Manning, after his first 9 years. Now, you know, Russ is still going here, but after first 9 years, Manning, 275 touchdowns and 139 interceptions. And Russell, 258. So he got one last night. I'm not sure if that's part of the graphic or it was after that. Mm-hmm. But he's got, you know, maybe 16 touchdowns in him these last five games. We'll see. But only 78 interceptions. And the other thing is about those touchdowns is that I went back and looked at the attempts, 550 more pass attempts for Peyton Manning over a 9-year period than Russell projects out. 550 more. So, I mean, Russ is doing it now. He's throwing it a lot more now. You know, I think we're probably 35 per game this year.
Mm-hmm.
And typically he's, you know, been 25 to 30. But still, you know, Peyton Manning was always just chucking it up, right? And you look at some of the stats that Russ, it's just the efficiency of how good he's been and how good he's been not throwing interceptions. I mean, that is almost twice as many interceptions. And actually, Marino almost exactly has twice as many interceptions as Russ over that same period of time.
Jake, just going on that same thing that Dave hit on, just in terms of Russell throwing the ball more. He threw it 31 times last night. They ran it 30 times. Now, I know a couple of those were scrambles from Russell that weren't planned, but ultimately that's as 50-50 as you're going to get. Do you feel like they're kind of dialing him back a little, the whole let Russ cook thing? Has that been dialed back a bit?
I believe so, yeah. I believe so, and I think that there's a strong conviction from Pete Carroll in conversations with Brian Schottenheimer that they want to, in his opinion, in his philosophy, the way that he knows how to win games, and he's been pretty darn successful with this, is that you have to have a physical style, a physical nature about you when it comes to playoff time. And I agree with that. In terms of that statement in and of itself. But there's also been a shift and a change with your team. And I don't believe that this team has the ability to go win a Super Bowl by playing that old school style and philosophy. They have to marry the two together. And I really think that that's going to be the key is, it's not about pass attempts. It's not about Russell needing to throw the ball 35, 40 times a game. But how aggressive are you on first and second down and trusting your quarterback to make those decisions for you? And I think that that's going to be the interesting watch over the next couple games, guys, is can they marry the two together? Can the defense get better and better each and every single week? And can this offense get back on track in terms of being one of the more dynamic, scary offenses in the league with Russell Wilson at the helm, complemented by Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson? If they can get that together, guys, it will be a scary, scary combination. And, you know, the rest of the league will have to watch out. I've said from the beginning this year, guys, that the Seattle Seahawks have the highest ceiling of any team in the league because there's still so much room to grow for this team.
That's a great point. Jake, awesome to have you, man. In fact, I think we should do it again next Monday.
Hey, I will be here as long as you guys have me. I appreciate it. Hopefully I didn't wear out my welcome.
No, you're coming back on Monday in the 3 o'clock hour. So
whether
Jake,
you like it or not.
Yeah, your choice in the matter is gone. You're here. You're going to be here. And you
All
guys
right,
can
well,
catch
well,
Jake. Go ahead.
I don't want you guys to put me in a chokehold or anything like that. You guys are too strong for me. So I'll be back next week, okay?
We appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Jake.
There you go.
Hey, thanks, guys.
There's Jake Heaps, part of Jake and Stacy every day right here on 710 ESPN Seattle from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. So tune in for that, and then he'll join us after each Seahawks game, whether it's on a Sunday or a Monday night game. He'll be there the following day at 3 p.m. Meanwhile, this guy's with us every day at 4 o'clock. The professor, John Clayton, will be here. If you guys have questions for John, start texting those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. That's next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.